manager who stole $70,000 from us was named Whitey, and he wasn't even white. He was Italian. Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from three people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Aaron Dyson.
Boy, I'm telling you, you brothers are going to be large. But like I said, you got to be careful. See, because y'all telling the truth. And the white man don't want y'all saying what you're saying.
Yeah, because when you take that bus, you get there.
Hello, everybody. It's Wreckatopia episode 106. I'm Chris Atkinson. And today's big recommend is Fear of a Black Hat.
Mm-hmm.
I am joined by Aaron Dicer.
Hi, Lee Ho, Cinerinos.
And I am joined by Jeremy Scott.
What am I doing on the left today? I'm usually in the middle.
And that's true.
Thank you.
Fix that. Now we can do a show. Thank God. And once again, welcome, chat, to come out here and watch this on a Tuesday. Thank you so much for coming out and talking movies with us. Does anybody on the panel have any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
Aaron, you better go first today because I'm bringing weird shit.
Well, me too, yeah. In fact.
All right.
I think we all are. I'm going with a movie that came out in 2023. Called River. Now, I don't think you've probably ever heard of this. The director is the same person that did a movie I've talked about before, maybe not on this show, I can't remember, called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes is a really fun movie. I suggest you seek it out. Really fun sci-fi kind of stuff. And this is similar in that it's really weird kind of sci-fi stuff. It basically follows a town where everybody in town is looping and they all know it and they're trying to figure it out together. So it's kind of a loop movie, but not just one person or not two people like in Palm Springs, but actually an entire little community is all looping together. I really, really enjoyed it. It was our surprise bonus movie this year at Spossker's Weekend, where we watch all the Oscar movies, and we had a good time watching it. So, seek it out. Again, these movies like Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes and River, your best bet is just to buy them off of Apple. I think they're both on Apple. Or rent them. I think you can rent them for $5 if you want to, because they're not really streaming anywhere that I could find. But it's a really good flick and worth a watch.
It sort of reminds me of that movie, The Endless, that came out a few years ago, where everybody's kind of in their own loop, but everybody's got different times of loops. I don't know if that's what happens here, but
not here.
Everybody's in the same
loop.
Link. In The Endless, you have like people, you have this one guy who's this poor bastard who's in a 5-second loop or whatever doing the same thing over and over again, all these other people have different time lengths of loops and everything. It's a really good movie. I'd love to see this. I'm always intrigued by this premise, so
That's really interesting sounding. I like to come into my office in the morning, turn on my computer, turn on the TV, and I go to channel 1434, which is TBS, which shows Friends reruns all morning. Mm-hmm. And on Saturdays and Sundays, I can't do that because they don't run Friends reruns. They show cut to hell Star Wars movies that take 4 hours to air with all the commercials they put in them. So on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm usually surfing the movie channels for something to put on in the background while I settle in at my computer, check my email, and all that stuff. And on Sunday, there was so nothing on. There was so nothing on. I either had negative interest or had seen very recently, it seemed every single movie that was being offered to me except one Showtime channel was showing a movie. Google says it's a 2022 movie. Showtime said it was a 2023 movie called The Civil Dead. I've never heard of anyone in this movie. I've never heard of this movie. It had a $30,000 budget. It made $33,000 back. And I just put it on. I said, fine, I'm putting you on. I don't know what you are. The description was fairly vague, but I've never seen you. You're going to be what goes on while I settle into my computer. Only the movie ended up drawing me in slowly. The internet says this is a mumblecore style film. I've never understood what that means definition wise, but if you do, then maybe that will help you know what this is. It's written by two friends who are both the stars of this movie. The main character's name is Clay. He's married. He's a photographer. He doesn't have a job. And his, maybe it's not his wife. Maybe it's his girlfriend. Either way, they live together. She's going out of town for her job for a few days, and she's encouraging him to get out there, take some photographs, apply for some jobs and whatnot. Instead, he sees a flyer for an apartment for rent. It says $40 application fee, and he decides to pretend his apartment is for rent and has couples in viewing his apartment and then takes $50 application fees from them, and he never intends to rent the apartment out. In this process, we see a guy in the background several times, just kind of staring, watching, lurking. And eventually, he starts talking to Clay, the main character, and they turns out they are old friends from high school. And this guy's name is Whit. And when Clay moved out to L.A., he ignored Whit's texts, and their friendship dissolved. And that was years and years ago. And now here Whit is. Now, I have to tell you the central conceit of this movie, or you're just not going to watch it. And you find this out about 30 minutes into the film, 20 minutes into the film. Whit is dead. No one can see or hear Whit except for Clay. Whit is unable to open doors or hold items. But now that he has finally found someone in Clay that can see him and talk to him, he doesn't want to leave him alone. And the movie then starts playing with friendships and how much work they can be sometimes and how annoying they can be sometimes. And that drew me in more and more. Like, his girlfriend comes home from her trip and he's like, "Welcome home. Did you leave the door open?" She's like, "No, why would I leave the door open?" But he wants the door left open so his ghost friend can come back in. I don't know if you're hooked or not, but I will tell you that the end of this movie literally made my jaw drop. I was gobsmacked by the ending of this movie. So there you go. I don't know what else to say.
It actually sounds like a less weird Swiss Army Man, maybe something of something of that nature. Yes. I think that that mumblecore, it definitely has a definition, but it's usually just like very low budget. Like, and I think it naturalistic acting is one of the things that they always understood about. Greta Gerwig used to be the queen of this. That was her claim to fame, was that she was the queen of mumblecore, and she was in a lot of those type of movies. And people like Mark Duplass and Joe Swanberg and all those guys are the people who
and
like,
Bombeck, Noah Bombeck,
I tend to take interest in movies like these just because of the weirdness and everything, so I'll have to check that out at some point.
I should also add, it's a 98 on Rotten Tomatoes of the 30-some critics who saw it. So I don't think I'm alone in thinking that it's really, really high quality.
Yeah. I don't have one that I'm like over the moon about or anything, but I did watch the first ever adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau called The Island of Lost Souls. This came out in 1932. It's based on the H.G. Wells. And of course, a lot of people are familiar with the last Island of Dr. Moreau that came out that had a lot of problems on set, and it's got its own documentary about it and everything. This one is a little bit more straightforward, but there's something about movies from the 30s that are very effective about being scary and creepy without all the stuff that we're used to in the modern day movies and everything. Bela Lugosi is not like a big character in this, but he's like plays one of the like half man, half like wolf or whatever the hell characters in this thing. But it's got the same, it's got a lot of the same setup, but this is not anything recognizable if you've seen Island of the Dr. Moreau, except for the experiments and stuff like that. A guy is picked up on a boat. He ends up getting dropped off on this island. Dr. Moreau, played by Charles Laughton, who's probably the best reason to watch this movie. His Dr. Moreau is very Like he's a creepy dude, and he's not afraid to be creepy, like in front of people that he's basically trying to trick and whatever. There's a point where he clearly sabotages a boat so that the guy can't get off the island, and he's like, "Oh, I don't know what could have happened there. My my residents must have done something. I don't know. Blah blah blah." You know, that type of acting job and everything. And the movie's basic thing is this guy has found a way to. He's found some sort of gene splicing or some sort of experiment of some sort to change things that we know. So you'll see, like, out in his garden, he's got all these, like, he's got this giant asparagus, and he's got, you know, giant flowers and everything. This is like the next step in their evolution right here, right now. And he's found a way to, like, turn a panther into a woman. And he turned all these, and his next experiment is he wants to take this guy who was shipwrecked. He wants to take him and mate him with the female panther girl that's in this movie. And so a lot of it is just about trying to get off the island because this dude's going to do that and everything. and the movie's very brisk. It's an hour and 10 minutes long. So, like, not much of an investment whatsoever. So, I do recommend this, just as a curiosity back in the 30s and everything. Sure. If you're ever in the mood for that type of thing, I think it's good.
Yeah. It's interesting. So many of these, you know, movies now have, you know, passed the century mark as far as them being in existence. And so we're getting kind of these, we're going to start getting really interesting 100-year anniversaries. You know, you're mentioning this movie's from the 30s. Like, that's, you know, we're a few ways from that being 100 years ago. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. On to our big recommend, which is we're going into the 90s, and our comedy this time is Fear of a Black Hat.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
This movie came out in the festival circuit, 1993, and then was officially released in 1994. There was another movie that came out in 1993 called CB4, which some of you may have seen out there. It starred Chris Rock. It was not a mockumentary. It was more of a straight narrative style and everything. But this one is definitely different from that. But this is a mockumentary in the style of this is Spinal Tap and the plot as it would be. Let's start off what this movie's about. Movie begins with a warning that they will not be using the words ass, booty, yo bitch, Bush is a dickhead, and big butt women in tiny bikinis gratuitously. And it tells us this three times. And we follow the group NWH. They're on stage. They're like NWA, only with, you know, hats. comprised of Tone Deaf, played by Mark Christopher Lawrence, Tasty Taste, Larry B. Scott, and Ice Cold, who's played by the writer and director, Rusty Cundiff. They're performing the song Wear Your Hat, Buried and Bald. But this is apparently how it all ends, according to Nina Blackburn, played by Casey Lemons, who I love, who is the documentary filmmaker following them around. So now we rewind, and this is where Nina first found them. They haven't hit it big yet. And she finds them in the hometown of Tough Neighborhood, USA. A place that the group doesn't want to mention by its real name because, hey, if you're going to really be hard, you don't want to say the name. We hear the group's origins. This is why, while Ice Cold was selling his single My Peanuts around the neighborhood that he had to press himself, Tone Deaf was selling bean pies, and Tasty was what he calls a pharmaceutical distributor. Now we get into the very political song My Peanuts, which contains the lyric, "My peanuts come alive when you open that sack." I love that, so
that
much.
Moment where he unzips and just a bunch of peanuts come out is just it just killed me.
It's so good. We then move on to NWH about to play a concert where the venue has decided to call them special guests on the marquee, and the bouncer won't even let them in. We also meet NWH's chief rival in the movie, the Jam Boys. NWH ends up beating up the bouncer in the first of many off-camera beatdowns. NWH complains to their manager that they don't have their performing hats. And I like how Ice Cold puts it. He's like, if they don't have their hats, then the WH no longer stands for with hats. It now stands for without hats. And that's, and that's an entirely different group that people didn't come to see. Ice Cold proceeds to tell Nina Blackburn that the philosophy around the name of their group is that back in the day, slaves weren't allowed to wear hats, and they were so tired from working out in the sun without hats that they couldn't rise up against their masters. And so now it's a statement that we got some hats now, motherfuckers. A white rapper named Vanilla Sherbert comes in and believes he can say and do anything around the group, and he ends up getting an off-camera beatdown. NWH is then told not to perform their song Grab Your Shit without censoring it. So they change it to Grab Your Stuff, censoring shit and dick, and do very well until Ice Cold hits himself in the nuts and says, oh shit, my dick! And they get arrested. Now we get to the next chapter, which is NWH coming out with their new album, Fear of a Black Hat, which they wanted to call Fear of a Black Hat, Don't Shoot Until You See the Whites. And Nina asks, of their eyes? And Ice Cold says, whose eyes? apparently they're always getting censored, and it goes into discussion about their song Kill Whitey, which the group insists was about their manager named Whitey, who was actually murdered, but they weren't around when that shit went down. Their label doesn't want to go with the album uncensored at all. This is where the movie sort of flubs the album title. I was kind of confused as to whether they were calling the album Gorillas in the Midst, or were they calling it Fear of a Black Hat? I think the movie settles on Fear of a Black Hat, but there's definitely a song called Gorillas in the Midst in here. But they wanted to do a cover with like a Two Live Crew-esque thing with 15 cops and their butts in the air, and the label doesn't want to do that. There's like a funny thing when they're trying to compromise with this. The label guy's like, 15 guys with the cops, 15 cops with their butts in the air, we don't want to do that. And he goes, well, how many do you want? And he goes, zero. He goes, why don't we split the difference and just put seven? So the label guy's an asshole. They end up beating up the label guy in an off-camera beatdown. They now go to Intergroove Records, where they can release Gorillas in the Midst uncut and Fear of a Black Hat album uncut. The record company guy here is played by Barry Shabaka Henley, who we last saw in Collateral, one of the victims of Collateral. He's I love how he's like, you guys are going to be so large. You're going to be so large, but you got to be careful. this album is so hard that politicians start getting involved and the group is getting arrested everywhere. So they're becoming a huge hit. They become so huge that they're becoming the headliner of tours, even over the rival Jam Boys. We're also introduced to this movie's parodies of real music stars, MC Slammer, Yo Highness, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, and then a whole bunch of ice wannabes, Ice Tray, Ice Coffee, Ice Water, Iceberg, Ice Cup, and Ice Box. Jam Boys end up killing NWH's manager in an argument, and we are now told that their last five managers have been killed in an homage to This Is Spinal Tap's drummer curse. And then NWH tells Nina Blackburn that their song Booty Juice is political. Ice Cold explains a not very convincing and hilarious metaphor about how the butt is like society. And then we see the music video, which is nothing but women's butts everywhere around a pool party. And one woman even has a tap on their butt that they can get the booty juice from. Nina now goes through the group individually. Tasty Taste has moved to a wealthy white neighborhood where everyone is afraid of him. He shows off his massive gun collection that he will never need, and a huge gun range with cutouts of Klan members and cops. When one cutout of a black man holding a gun comes out, he says, the cops would have shot this guy, but I know better. He was just chilling. She visits Tone Deaf, who shows his amazing skills on a turntable using his tongue and then his penis to scratch the records. Finally, there's Ice Cold, while they're driving around, they get pulled over by security guards. This leads to probably my favorite gag of the movie, where he's got multiple witnesses with multiple cameras recording the traffic stop, including a guy who's sketching it just in case Tate get erased. He's even got a photo of him buying the car that he's being accused of stealing. We are also treated to the song Fuck the Security Guards, which has a hilarious video in of itself. Another funny video for A Gangster's Life Ain't Fun, which seems to make it sound like a lot of fun, transitions into that very inappropriate video being shown to children in a classroom. They and the Jam Boys came to talk to the kids about not living a life of crime, but it ends up being a dick measuring contest about which group is the hardest. And then I'm wondering if this was a thing, because of course there's a famous part in 8 Mile where Eminem, at the end is telling a guy that he went to a prep school and everything. And that's what Ice Cold does here. He drops the knowledge on everybody that the lead singer of Jam Boys has been went to a prep school. He was in the Glee Club, he was on the yearbook, and he even edited the yearbook. The Jam Boys and NWH end up getting in a shootout. There's a funny line in here too that I love, where they're talking about how hard the lead singer of Jam Boys is, and the guy's like, "This guy's been shot 22 times. He ain't got no blood." I love that. The delivery is so funny. Tension forms in the band when Ice Cold expresses his disapproval over a groupie that Tasty Taste is hooking up with named Cheryl, who claims not to be a groupie, but totally is. Cheryl starts telling Tasty what to do, and he starts demanding a lot of things because she feels Ice Cold is getting all the opportunities outside the band. We see Ice Cold playing a cop in a movie called New Mac Village, directed by Jike Spingleton, who is both Spike Lee and John Singleton, and he's both of them sort of married together, and he claims that they stole from him. The movie they're shooting is super ridiculous, focusing on a gangster who uses babies and cribs to sell drugs. Tasty and Ice get in a fight on stage, which leads to them not even performing, and then they try to fight backstage. Because they don't want to use weapons and don't want to be accused of having weapons, they start disarming and then feel the need to remove clothing to prove they're not hiding anything, and nearly strip naked before they are stopped. Then things get to the final straw when Tasty discovers Cheryl sleeping with Ice Cold. Everybody, including Cheryl and their new manager, draw guns. An errant bullet fired by their manager, of course, kills the manager. Now everybody has gone on to their solo careers. Ice Cold is doing what is a parody of CNC Music Factory, has a hit song called Come and Pet the Pussy, which is another political statement, of course. Tone Deaf is now a part of New Human Formantics, which is a parody of PM Dawn, singing a song, I'm Just a Human Being, which is obsessed with how everybody's number twos are the same. And then Tasty Taste does a diss track called Granny Said Kick Your Ass, which is a parody of LL Cool J's Mama Said Knock You Out. Tone Deaf gets beat up by a taxi driver, which brings NWH back together to visit him in the hospital. But they definitely aren't ready to perform together again until the old Jam Boys manager proposes to guide them back to the top with a new label and everything. Then we get the What Are They Doing Now stuff. NWH is working on the Black in the Hat comes back. Their new manager gets killed, of course. Nina is pregnant with Ice Cold's second baby. Then there's the outtakes, essentially, and my favorite is the discussion about the difference between bitches and hoes. I thought that was hilarious. What did you guys think about this movie?
This was my first time watching this movie all the way through. I think I'd seen certain scenes here and there. I like a movie that can make me laugh out loud, and this movie does it several times. I think the best joke for me is that explanation of the Kill Whitey song, because it has two layers of the joke. They first start out saying, well, how could you possibly think the song Kill Whitey is about killing all white people? And then she starts reading the lyrics, and they're like, yeah, well, that doesn't mean kill all white people. And you think at first it's funny because the song is exactly what they're saying it's not. Then they drop the fact that, no, our manager who stole $70,000 from us was named Whitey, and he wasn't even white. He was Italian. the way that second layer of the joke comes in, it's just absolutely brilliant. I was especially taken by the quality of the parody song. This is Simpson-level parody song quality. I almost made a Simpsons episode my double feature, but just because of that. The My Peanuts is spoofing that My Adidas song. I think that I'm Just Human is spoofing like three or four different things. You said PM Dawn. I also heard a little Tom's Diner and a little Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians in there. But I could go back and do a deep dive just on the quality of the parody songs. A lot of lesser movies would not spend the time required to make those songs actually awesome. I loved early on where they did that whole conversation about you can't smile because then it shows that you're not hard. And he says, this guy shot a guy for taking his picture while he was thinking about smiling. I love the protester sign that says Quakers against rap. I'm just going through my notes here. I love the movie, the spoof movie, because you get the bad guy close up in the face. He's obviously screaming at an underling that did a very bad job selling the drugs. And after about 30 seconds of this, we cut to the wide shot of the reveal that he's screaming at a baby in a carriage. And I was not expecting that. But yeah, I really, really liked it. I did notice that 8 Mile, like I wrote, nice, his name is Clarence moment in this movie. And I wonder if there are real groups that I just don't know the history of where this was discovered, like you said, where one of them actually went to a prep school or something. I don't know. Yeah. This movie deserves 5 to 10 more rewatches in the next several years of my life. I thought it was hysterical.
Super duper funny. Chris mentioned a lot of the specific moments that I would point out that were hilarious. Jeremy, you mentioned one of my main points, which is the songs are so good. It's like Spinal Tap in that way. Like the Spinal Tap songs are like good songs, and you like listen to these songs, and as much as they are great parodies, like they work as songs, which is not easy to do. And I was really impressed with that as well. The other thing that I was really struck by was how perfectly you could have released this movie 3 years after Straight Outta Compton and people would have seen it as a parody of that movie.
It is
like insane the direct correlations to the beat for beat they're doing, because they come from, you know, the real world, and then you have this real world, not documentary but narrative feature on the group, and it's amazing to me how much it feels like a parody of Straight Outta Compton. It's wild.
Yep.
In that way. My favorite parody had to be the CNC Music Factory stuff. It was just too perfect. It was so perfect. I'm surprised they didn't get copyright, infringement for it. It's just that good. And then the other thing is just seeing people show up that, and I'm just like, I know that person. Like Penny Johnson-Gerald, who's in the Orville. Seeing her show up and just going, oh, I know her, which is really fun. Kurt Loder shows up a few times. And I'm just like, I remember Kurt Loder.
Yep.
That's amazing. What a get. A few things here or there that, you know, some of the homosexuality stuff was a little icky, the portrayal and the gay panic stuff. There's certainly some acting that leaves a little to be desired throughout this, but man, how dead on it is with the comedy parody stuff is just hilarious. So yeah, it's good stuff.
I think Casey Lemons quietly steals scenes in this movie just by her reactions that she has to the stuff that's going on in there, and I've always loved her. And Rusty Cundiff, I mean, he's the writer and director, so he very much knows this material inside and out. I loved a lot of his line readings in this. There's a part towards the end. He's like, you guys lie with dogs, and that's how you get disease, motherfuckers. You know, it's just the way he says it. I'm loving it. There was a point in time that I actually considered in this 90s comedy thing of doing his other movie that came out that was a fairly decent hit. Tales from the Hood was another one that was pretty funny that could have fit in this one pretty well as well. But after he did this, he did like Sprung, and he kind of fell off after that. And it's kind of a shame, because there's you can see a lot of his talent here. And he just recently came out with another movie It was Ian was talking about it the other day. I can't remember what that was, but I was like, I was surprised to see that he was the director of this. But anyway, I don't think there's much else to really say. I mean, we've kind of covered all of this. So let's go to our super secret double feature for this.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Jeremy, go first.
I'm glad you said that because I have the best one, I think. And well, I just don't want you to steal mine is what I'm really trying to say.
Get it. I've got two options. So
I think the most logical thing here to do on the surface is to pick another mockumentary about musicians, right? I didn't do that because I challenged myself and I wanted to kind of tackle the themes, but inversely. So I'm going with Bulworth.
Nice.
Which is Warren Beatty playing a politician who began his career very liberal and over the years has been pushed to the center. And he is fed up and he sets up a $10 million life insurance policy for his daughter to receive. And he knows that suicide will void it. So he hires a hitman to kill him in 2 days and then stops giving all the fucks and starts saying all the truth about how DC works and how politicians operate. And he uses rap as a medium to do this in many instances and starts hanging around with Halle Berry and another gal, pretty blatantly appropriating their culture, but at the same time saying a lot of true things that politicians are not known for saying. So I just think thematically, I think that would be a nice way to examine a lot of the same issues that Fear of a Black Hat is making fun of. Bulworth is my pick, and this may be one of my favorite double features I've ever picked.
This was another movie that I considered for this 90s thing because I thought that would have been a good one to cover as well. So I'm glad to hear Bulworth being mentioned here on this one. So Aaron,
I thought of a lot, of course. You eliminate Spinal Tap because it's the clear inspiration for this movie, and it would make a good double feature, but it's a little too perfect. And I, like Jeremy, fought through some musical parodies. I think A Mighty Wind, it would be a fun double feature with this. I think Pop Star Never Stopping is a perfect mirror of this movie, but it's it's so much more polished than this movie is. Like, this movie feels like on the ground, like friends getting together, just recording stuff kind of thing. So I went a little bit with parody and a little bit with unpolished, and I decided for my super secret double feature to do UHF.
Nice. Okay.
So it feels there's a lot of similar feel to the tone of the parody that's in this that is in UHF. There's both music and movie parodies in here as well. And it has that kind of ground level, shoestring budget kind of feel to it as well. So I thought UHF might make a good double feature.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. I like both of those. And I'm kind of glad you guys resisted the temptation to do other mockumentaries and things like that.
So,
okay. What is next week's homework? Aaron's turn, I believe.
Yes. We're going to go back to 2016, all the way back 8 years ago. To 2016 for one of my favorite animes ever made. It's called Your Name. And I love this movie. I want more people to see this movie. And so I picked it for our big recommend for next week. It is available on the Criterion Channel. It is also available on Crunchyroll, as much anime stuff is. So if you have either of those services, you should have access to it.
I think you have this on Blu-ray, but I've never seen it. So I remember when it came out, it had a lot of good reviews and everything. I even looked it up when I saw that this is what you were recommending, and it's like 8.4 on the IMDb. So that's
pretty solid.
So I'm looking forward to seeing this. Okay, well, it looks like we have a lot of time for questions today.
We have more time for questions than we have questions, so we may have to get creative.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Here we go. What obscure movie death scene is burned into your memory. Just now realizing I missed the word obscure in that question, so my answer is not going to work. Fellas?
I'm not sure if the question is asking if it's from an obscure movie or if it's the death scene itself is obscure. But if we go with obscure movie, I'm going to go with Alpha Dog, and I'm going to say that the senseless killing of Anton Yelchin's character is one that is burned into my memory because it's so. I think there's a, especially now when you watch it, it's twofold. You're watching a senseless killing that doesn't need to happen whatsoever. Like the whole movie has been set up where this guy doesn't have to be killed and he gets killed. And then Anton Yelchin himself, knowing that he is no longer with us, that scene rings a little bit harder, now when you watch it today. So
especially if you watch the opening of that movie, it's got a haunting cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow set to actual childhood images and video of Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking now that he has died to watch that opening. That's also a movie that is much better than its ratings, and we're going to get to it on this show eventually.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Sorry for the huge tonal shift. But the obscure movie death that is burned into my memory is Propeller Guy from Titanic.
Yeah.
I think of his head hitting that propeller all the time, and I don't know why. That's the one for me.
You said propeller, and I immediately went to, I just saw a thing on Twitter last week about that moment in Game Night where the guy gets sucked into the plane engine.
Uh-huh.
And the script apparently just has Rachel McAdams going, oh no. Like in the movie, she goes, yeah. Oh, but he died. And yeah. It's like one of the funniest moments in the whole movie. And she absolutely ad-libbed it. I just love that.
Yeah. I guess technically on a ship like that, are those called propellers? I don't know. They look like, you know, propellers to me. So, you know,
they're called
engines, propellers? Turbines. I don't know. Whatever they are. That guy hit one.
I did not notice the word obscure. I don't know if my movie or the death I picked is obscure, but it's Elijah Wood in the Ice Storm.
Been
all this drama going on between the parents and the affairs. And, you know, we're also intercutting with how the kids are kind of dealing with this situation and this time in their lives. And there's this big ice storm and Elijah Wood quite innocently bundles up and goes out to play and explore. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting on this metal railing on a street. Everything's covered in ice. And a power line snapped from a falling branch. And he's kind of like in awe of it. And there's no score to my recollection. And the camera just follows the current up the thing and he slumps to the ground and then slides slowly down the hilly street.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most sock in the gut movie deaths I think I've ever had. And I will never forget it.
Yeah. And I guess if you were to go with a popular movie and an obscure death, can it be famous and obscure at the same time? But in The Dark Knight, the guy who's on top of the cash pile, we hardly ever get like any kind of confirmation that he's on top of that cash pile. I mean, we know he is. It's just that the movie kind of like does its best to ignore it. And then when Heath Ledger like throws that match behind and blows the whole thing goes up in flames, you kind of forget the dude's on top of it.
Yeah.
And he's gonna burn to death. Oh god, it's so rough. Looking at the chat, Slab asks, American History X obscure? I don't think it's obscure anymore. I don't even know if it was obscure back then, but I think you're talking about the curb stomp scene, which I think is imprinted in everybody's heads.
Yeah.
And then let's see, the Ethan says the dude killed in the cow pasture in Saving Private Ryan. Josh says the murder of Jeffrey Lewis's character in The Devil's Rejects. Let's see, the Oh Thank God death from Waterworld. Nick says the correct answer is Brad Pitt and Meet Joe Black. Well,
of course, oh my God,
that is one of the funniest ones for sure. Let's see, what else do we have over here?
He gets ragdolled. So awesome.
Yeah, yes, he does. Oh yeah, the guy getting slowly stabbed in Saving Private Ryan. Yeah, that's a rough one to look at for sure.
Oh yeah.
Okay, on to the next question.
What is your guiltiest of guilty pleasure movies? Give me the embarrassing stuff.
Jeremy is going to mention one of mine, but I want him to say this one. But there was one I saw while I was on break. I watched the entire Friday the 13th series, and one of them that came out like oh my god, I actually love this movie is Friday the 13th Part 6, which is basically a comedy. It even starts off with Jason killing all these people, and it does this 007 style thing at the beginning where he's like walking in under the camera and everything, and he slashes or whatever. It's kind of, I mean, the movie's not great by any means, but it is enjoyable. It really is like one of those, the part Friday the 13th Part 6. Are you kidding me? So yeah, I'm gonna mention that one as my guiltiest of
that's awesome, Aaron.
Police Academy 4 Citizens on Patrol.
Wow.
I'm not even kidding. I think that movie, I mean, there's a certain level of where you have to dial your brain to, but of the Police Academy movies, which by the way, after the first one, just kind of turned into like family comedies. Like the first one is this rated R, you know, doesn't hold up well, kind of raunch fest. And the rest of them are just like, we're taking this concept and beating it into the ground, but we're doing it in a PG way now, which is interesting. It's Gutenberg's last Police Academy movie. I think it was kind of his final one. Sharon Stone shows up as a lead part in it, which is interesting. And then you've got, of course, all the, you know, the, kind of the key players that have been there. And you've got Michael Winslow doing all the sound effects, which is always one of the fun things. And you've got Hightower and Tackleberry, and everybody's playing their character roles. One of the things that's really interesting about the Police Academy movies is how they have defined each of these people. And like Tackleberry is an interesting one because it's both not aged well, but also is making fun of the thing that it hasn't aged well for. Like the Tackleberry character is the one who always wants to shoot, always wants to have a gun. Uh-oh. And the part that hasn't aged well is, of course, that we're supposed to like Tackleberry, but it's also making fun of how, you know, force aggressive police forces are. And so it's kind of interesting to watch that kind of stuff. It also has a very young Tony Hawk showing up as a skateboarder who he's doubling David Spade, who is in this movie. So like, yeah, it's an interesting one to go back and watch. It has its own song that it starts and ends the movie with that I think Michael Winslow did called Citizens on Patrol. Bobcat Goldthwait, of course, shows up in it as he does a few of the movies. I think this is, if you're only going to watch one Police Academy movie, I think it's Citizens on Patrol.
So there you go. Never seen a Police Academy movie.
Not a single one.
Not a single one.
All right.
It's not like I'm trying to avoid them. Just I've not seen them. I'm trying to avoid them. I think I would have greatly enjoyed the sound effects guy in all of those movies had I watched them when they came out, because these movies were in the 80s, right?
I actually saw Michael Winslow at Zany's a long time ago.
Oh wow.
That was fun. Yeah.
Did he do sound based comedy, or was he just doing stand up?
Nearly the whole thing is that, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I don't hide my guilty pleasures. I think listeners know that. So I wrote down three that I think are considered bad by critics, but that I unabashedly love. The 2015 Ed Helms vacation film. The 1995 Waterworld by Kevin Costner, previously mentioned by the Oh Thank God death in the previous question. The poster behind Chris on the wall right now, 1993's Demolition Man, which... I'm kind of pissed. I'll be honest. This was my guilt. I was the guy on this hill for 25 years. And now this movie has suddenly become good in the eyes of everyone. Yeah. Even though it got bad reviews. So this, I don't even think this counts as a guilty pleasure anymore. And I'm kind of, you'd think I'd be happy that I was there first, but no, I'm pissed. This was my thing. Yeah. This was a Jeremy thing. And now y'all are taking it.
Well, and this is a movie that I, strangely enough, when I was an usher at a movie theater, used to go in and watch all the time on my break. So it became special to me as well. during this time. And of course I somehow got the poster when I was there. So yeah, 30-year-old poster behind me there.
Nice. You've still got
a reprint.
You've still got Time Cop, Jeremy. You've still got Time Cop. It hasn't made the turn yet.
That's the problem now. I've got you at least like Time Cop. I need to keep people off this island.
Over on the chat, we have Polly saying Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. I kind of agree with you on that one, because that's just one of those movies that's like completely separate from all the other Fast and Furious is really, even though I don't think it's good, but I think it is fun. The Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap with a smiley face. I don't know if serious at that point, but
my wife loved that movie.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. It's a good movie.
Slab says Joe Dirt for me. I've heard a lot of people talk about Joe Dirt recently. Mm-hmm. I never watched Joe Dirt when it came out. Maybe I should give it a chance.
Is that Spade? Is that David Spade as well?
David Spade. Yeah. Castor says most of the Fast and Furious franchise, really. That's not me, though. Josh says Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Yeah. Is that the Rennie Harlan one? I'm not sure. Rennie Harlan definitely did one that was, I think that was the one that was was kind of fun. Then there is, let's see, Love Actually and Street Fighter. Love them both, but also am aware. Love Actually, I don't think is a guilty pleasure, though. I mean, I think most people love Love Actually who've seen it and aren't actively avoiding it like Jeremy. But let's see. And then Slab does the Simpsons. Who made Steve Guttenberg a star? We do.
Stonecutters.
Castro says Cars 2. I don't agree with that. Wild Wild West. Personally believe it's great, but a lot of people seem to think otherwise. I'm one of the otherwise.
Yes.
Let's see. And then we'll talk about Police Academy and Evolution.
Wow. That's a good call. I like Evolution. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Jeremy does not.
You do you.
A lot of discussion about Demolition Man and that
everybody loves it. Did you see my point? Everybody in the chat loves Demolition Man and always thought it was good. I'm talking like it came out and it was considered bad. It was considered not good.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I was there first. Me and Stallone.
I know, man. What can I say?
Also, I did see in the chat a couple mentions of my love of the Wrong Turn sequels. Yes, that's true.
Yes.
I love the Wrong Turn sequels.
The Wrong Turn.
This question has aged like milk because it was about what we thought would win the animated Oscar. So let's improvise on this question and let's ask what your biggest surprise from the Oscars was this year, guys.
Oh, man, the biggest surprise. Whew. I don't know if there was anything that super surprised me.
Yeah, there weren't any Will Smith slap moments.
No.
Aaron,
I don't know if
I mean, I think Emma Stone beating Lily Gladstone is probably the biggest surprise by the typical definition of, like, you know, awards that were given out. But they're, you know, I think the biggest surprise for me, if you're looking like a long term, like if you were to go back to this time last year and look ahead and go, okay, here's what's going to be competing. Maestro and the Scorsese movie Killers of the Flower Moon, Ofer, neither one won a single Oscar. And wow. Like looking ahead to the year, you would have thought those two will be, you know, in big contention. So things like that, I think, like if you take like a long view, there's some interesting surprises how the year turned out.
We talked a little bit in the pre-show, which will end up the outtakes of this episode, about Ryan Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken. I think that was my biggest surprise, was not that I thought that he would be just fine. I thought he would be just fine. Mm-hmm. I did not think he would be that phenomenal and embrace it quite as much as he did. And he really, I think, stole the whole broadcast with that performance. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. One more question and then we'll get to lunch. Who is your favorite movie star? This is not the same as your favorite actor. It is for
me. He gets a lot of shit, and there's good reasons for it, but I think my favorite movie star is Tom Cruise. And I think the reason for that is that, first off, I think he's underrated as an actor in general. I don't think he's ever been just like, I don't know. There's been he's had a few performances that I would say were definitely like extremely good. And of course, a lot of times people point out that his performance in Rain Man, which is sort of upstaged by Dustin Hoffman, is actually some of the best acting he's ever done, because it's just one of those where he's willing to take the background, and he's a huge star at the point of Rain Man. But I think even though we make fun of it a lot on CinemaSins and things like that, the fact that he is so willing to go into a project and be the person who flies the planes and does the stunts, and he is the guy who demands all this, like, you know, this professionalism from everybody on the set and everything, that really appeals to me. I think Cruise the person has a lot of things that are left to be desired, but I think as a person who gets behind the, you know, who's in front of the camera and all the stuff he does behind the camera, I don't know if there's anybody that tops him as far as movie stars are concerned.
I like what you said about Rain Man. It kind of reminds me of how important the straight man is in a comedy routine, because the guy who's outrageous, like a Danny Kaye, Bing Crosby, and White Christmas, Danny Kaye gets all of the outrageous physical motions and jokes and laughs, but it doesn't work if Bing Crosby's not over there on the other side reacting properly as the straight man. And that's what Tom Cruise has to do in Rain Man, and he's exceptional at it. And you're in luck, because he said something a week or two ago about how he wants to do more auteur type work like he did with Magnolia. And he doesn't just want to do action stuff from here on out. So that is exciting to me because I like his acting a lot. Aaron?
Brad Pitt, I think, is my favorite movie star. I think Tom Cruise is the epitome of movie star that we have left. Like, if you think of, like, you know, what movie stars have been in the past, I think Cruise is one of the few that we can put in that category. But I think Brad Pitt goes in that category as well. And I love the way he chooses movies. I love the way he's always Brad Pitt in his movies. But there's always something a little bit interesting about the performance. You know, 12 Monkeys is maybe the most he's stretched his performance in a lot of his stuff, but like from the Oceans movies to, I just rewatched True Romance recently, and his part in that is so good.
Don't condescend me, man.
Exactly. I was working through the 90s, and I watched Cool World, and I was as weird as that movie is, as strange as it is, like, Brad Pitt just, like, you know, just jumps off the screen at you. Like, he's just, he's, I don't know, he's got this charisma, and I think he's my favorite movie star. So, yeah.
I have chosen maybe one of the only other movie stars left, because we just don't make them that much anymore, and I got Denzel on my card, and
yeah,
he just, there's two reasons. He always brings it. Always. Even in the shittiest movie he's ever been in, he brings it. Ultimate professional. But also, if you tell me he's in it, I'm gonna watch it. And there's maybe no other actor like that. I haven't seen Bullet Train. I like Brad Pitt okay, but he didn't alone make me want to watch Bullet Train. I think I have seen all of Tom Cruise's films, but if he came out with A Lion for Lambs today, I wouldn't watch that. No. But if Denzel did, I'd watch that. Maybe Denzel should remake Lions for Lambs. What do you think?
On the chat, we have Ryan Gosling. Nick says Ryan Gosling. Yeah, if you're going to, now it's going to be an interesting debate as to what we consider, you know, movie star and whatever, who can sell a movie. And I don't know if there's too many of those these days. DiCaprio, I think, probably comes the closest, but if we're just narrowing it to the fact that they're famous for acting and everything, Ryan Gosling's a great one. I love Gosling a lot. I've loved him for a long time. And then we have, Josh says Sam Neill's my favorite actor, but my favorite star is probably Cruise. That's my, not my name, says I like Affleck a lot too. And Anne Hathaway. Yeah, I love Anne Hathaway as well. Slab says Emma Stone. You can't go wrong with Emma Stone. Emma Stone is just fantastic. Does it have to be a current actor? No. Polly says Toshirô Mifune, who is awesome in all the Akira Kurosawa movies. Nick says RDJ has definitely obtained movie star status. Yeah, absolutely. He also says Cary Grant is definitely one of my favorite. Yeah, for sure. We got another vote for Gosling, Schwarzenegger, And then let's see. Giancarlo Esposito wants Denzel to be Magneto, and I'm okay with that. Hey, you know what? It would be pretty freaking amazing if that was the case. So. All right.
Jeremy, I just in this, I promise this is not like trying to gotcha or anything. I'm just genuinely haven't you heard you talk about Denzel's like recent movies. So like Tragedy Macbeth and Roman J. Israel and like
yes. Tragedy Macbeth, he's great. I didn't dig the whole movie. That Roman J. Israel, I have a tweet somewhere a few years ago, but I think I wrote, I think the entire point of this movie is to prove what an asshole this guy is. But Denzel was great.
Love it.
But yes, I am a Denzel devotee. If I had to list my top five favorite actors right now, it'd be him, Chris Pine, Andrew Garfield, and maybe Ben Foster. I'd have to struggle there for a while.
Garfield's a good choice, too. Yeah, Andrew Garfield's got movie star qualities as well. Yeah.
Yep.
Good stuff.
For sure. Well, we actually got to the hour mark. Look at that, guys. Look at us. Look at us go. Next week will be Your Name. Once again, chat, thanks for coming out and watching us. We love you guys. Thank you so much. But that's going to do it for this week. We'll see you next week. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
My brain never remembers looking at this Fear of a Black Hat image that that's a woman's ass. It's always like some kind of mask. Probably COVID has just scarred me that much.
Uh-huh.
That when I see that, I think he's got his COVID mask on instead of he's peeking out from behind some woman's butt.
I can see that. I can see that.
It's unusual to see you in a ball cap.
Yeah.
Get a bad haircut?
No, the haircut's fine. I don't know. I got up this morning. I mean, that's not bad, right? Like I could, it's not a bad hair day or anything. I was just feeling ball cap today. I don't know why. I haven't felt ball cap in a while. And I was just like, oh, I should throw the Sin Week cap on. And so I did.
I was reading literally 10 minutes ago about this article on ESPN about two young Orioles players who are about to embark on their third annual Lego contest throughout the baseball season. It's Gunnar Henderson, who just won Rookie of the Year, and then Colton Cowser, who's probably going to make the team out of camp this year. Mm-hmm. They're both like 23, 24. And the first year they built this giant $800 Millennium Falcon throughout the season. And Colton Cowser won, but Gunnar says that's because he got called up to the majors halfway through and his life was distracted. So then the next season they built some other Star Wars thing and Gunnar won. But then Cowser says, no, I changed teams three times throughout that season. It's not so this year, they're going to go pick out another one. And they're probably both going to be in Baltimore. So it'll be the truest test yet. But it's funny. It's funny reading the stories about how carefully they load this half-built Millennium Falcon into the truck with pillows all around it so they can drive from Norfolk to Baltimore. I'd also talked about how... it helps them decompress. Like it's, you know, some people play video games, some people listen to music. These guys like Legos to decompress. And I think it's neat that these younger generations are like, hey, adults can do all this stuff. We can have adult coloring books now. Adults can play with Legos. Adults can play video games. I appreciate that.
House things, house tricks. Everybody caught up from their Oscars hangover?
Yes.
No. I'm not. Nope. I think it mainly, but it's not the Oscars hangover. It's more of the time change.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's still bothering me, too. But.
Yeah. It was a 1-2 punch for sure for me.
I wake up, you know, an hour later now, which is great. But also it means that all the things that I've been used to are like, you know, oh, fuck, it's 10 o'clock now, not 9 o'clock, which is, you know, when I'm like doing my wake up routine in the morning and everything. So.
Yeah.
So I'm having to, I'm sure it'll get back to 5:30 in the next few weeks. Cats will start wanting to wake me up and everything. So,
yeah, I slept 10 hours last night, which I never sleep 10 hours. I'm usually like a 7 guy. Like I'll, you know, like, you know, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. That's usually what I do. But yeah, I was just the weekend just killed me. Like doing 4 hours of a live stream, like a constant live stream like that is just exhausting. Like I had a headache yesterday so bad. Like it literally is like a hangover kind of thing.
Well, you're not even counting in the fact that you sat and watched all 10 nominated movies the couple days before the show. So
well, that's
yeah,
true.
You deserve 10 hours of sleep.
Yeah. I deserve something.
I would sleep 10 hours every night if I could. I would gladly. I mean, I would love it. I love nothing more than those nights where I wake up and, oh, I slept for 10 hours. It's great. Just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
I remember those days when I was in college. it's amazing though, man. I would be up until like 4 o'clock in the morning and had an 8 o'clock class sometimes, or 7 o'clock class at one point, and just like it just didn't matter. Yep. Like, I'll get a couple of hours, it'll be fine. I'll go over and do my class and then I'll come back and sleep some more before my next class.
It's a lot easier to do that when your body is still growing. So I can't just do that now.
No.
My wife the other day said, maybe you should take a nap because I was really exhausted. I was like, well, here's the deal. I've reached an age where when I get out of bed, when I go from lying prone to standing, I have drainage. And for about 20 or 30 minutes every morning, I'm blowing my nose to get rid of the drainage. If I take a nap in the middle of the afternoon, I'm going to have to go through all that shit again. So I'll just skip the nap. I don't want to deal with that drainage waking up shit. So
yeah.
Drainage.